Welcome to episode 113 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Jordan has Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levesine, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. You know that Alan Moore guy who's been writing comic books for forever? Well, he had some comments on the whole Watchmen thing and DC thing the past week. We're going to discuss the hell out of it on this episode, and then decide once we're all done whether or not we make any sense. Like Alan Moore. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name is Ian Levesine, and welcome to episode 113 of Comic Timing. 113. I like that number. That works. And I'm joined with the guy who I haven't talked to in so long. It feels like we're miles and miles away, and I haven't heard his voice, so I need to hear it right now. Mr. Brent Cassino, what's going on, Brent?
Hey.
Yeah, man. Is this the first time we've ever done two recordings in a night other than like a milestone episode?
Yes, it is.
Wow. This makes me feel a little happy inside.
We should space these episodes out by like a month just to throw the listeners off.
Don't we do that anyway?
Shh.
All right. Well, you're here and back for the first time in a while, Mr. Julian Lytle. What's up, Julian?
What's up, Ian? What's up, Brent? Been a while. I've been on this show.
Yeah, not too much, man. You gonna be in New York, man?
Oh yeah, man. Got my little picture up on the site.
Nice.
What was the last time you were on, Julian?
Dude, I think it was around last time there was a New York Comic Con.
Well, you were on for Super Show.
Yes, I was.
Yeah,
you've never been on with me then.
Oh, well,
Maybe once.
I don't know. Well, either way, now, worst comes to worst, you're breaking your Brent virginity tonight.
Oh.
Consider it that way.
What a wonderful experience.
and a man who lost his Brent virginity a long time ago, Mr. DeFixer himself. Umar, what's going on, man?
What's up?
Yo, Dookie! Dookie, pick up!
Living in the 90s.
That's us, man. That's us. How you been, Umar? It's been a while.
Oh, you know, keeping on, doing the show.
Awesome.
You know, trying to make ends meet, keep this mortgage so I keep the roof over my head and crap.
Trying to keep Daryl and Gabe in line.
Oh, I haven't seen Gabe in a while, so.
Yeah, where is he?
He's been doing his own show, and I think he's been working on a whole bunch of other things. I think also trying to get his job stuff together and things.
You know, jobs are a good thing.
Yeah, and since I'm boycotting cons this year, I can't meet with everybody like I want to, so.
You're boycotting cons this year?
Yes, the cons have been financially stressful, so I decided I had to cut back on a bunch of things to get some things straightened out, and cons had to go.
So no New York for you this year, huh?
No New York, but I'm coming back next year.
Okay, that's fine. Well, speaking of New York, quick plug here just to get it out there. Again, they never sent me a copy, but I'll pimp them anyway. We are indeed sponsored by New York Comic Con. Check them out at nycomiccon.com. If you have not gotten your tickets yet, now would be the time. And in fact, if you're in the New York area, you could definitely get your tickets at either Jim Hanley's Universe or Midtown Comics. And they have exclusive retailer art on the tickets. So you can pick up your tickets there and get special versions of the NY Comic Con tickets at those locations. So say hi to Raph and buy yourself a ticket, or say hi to Larry at Jim Hanley's and get yourself your tickets that way, or pre-order them, whatever you want to do. Comic Timing will be there in the podcast arena, along with guys like Raging Bullets and guys like Comic Geek Speak, Comic News Insider, a couple of other guys too. I think like When Monsters Dwell is there this year, I think. And a bunch of other podcasts. But most importantly, this is the first year in the history of New York Comic Con that there will be a podcasting panel. And we have Lori Thomas to thank for this, even though she won't be there due to a knee surgery that she's going to be undergoing a couple days before the con. But I will be one of the guys manning the podcasting panel on Friday night. So make sure to stop on by. I believe it's in panel 5 at 6:30. And it'll have Peter Rios, Sean and Jim, myself, Jim Dietz, and Johnny M. And there might be one more. Oh, yeah, Daryl. So basically, it's just going to be all of us sitting there waiting for Daryl to stop talking. So that'll be fun.
Y'all better have a 5-second timer for Daryl.
So right.
Let you know.
I'll bring like an air whistle with me. That way, like whenever we need him to stop talking, we'll just give him a and that'll be all he needs. But nycomiccon.com, check it out. We'll hope to see you there at Podcast Arena and hopefully at the panel. So, all right, let's get this episode underway. We're talking Alan Moore on this episode, specifically relating to the interview that Bleeding Cool broke about a week ago, discussing the whole what happened with Watchmen and the potential sequels that wound up not happening, and basically how for a while there, it looked like they might have been playing emotional manipulation with Alan Moore to try and get him to perhaps accept the rights of Watchmen in return for allowing him to do sequels. And, you know, whether or not this is true, it's hard for us to really say, but this is Alan Moore's interpretation of it. And the interview is very long. I read through it all. Hopefully the rest of the guys on this call did as well. We'll discuss it here. I believe two of us are pro Alan Moore and two of us are con. But you know what? Before we even get into that, let me actually play a clip of Alan Moore's opinions on this whole comic book thing that I found online. So let me play that right now.
Alan Moore, you wrote my favorite issues of Radioactive Man.
Oh, really? So you like that I made your favorite superhero a heroin-addicted jazz critic who's not radioactive?
I don't read the words. I just like when he punches people. How do you make his costume stick so close to his muscles? Mr. Moore, will you sign my DVD of Watchmen Babies? Which of the babies is your favorite?
You see what those bloody corporations do? They take your ideas and they suck them. Suck them like leeches until they've gotten every last drop of the marrow from your bones.
Hey, Teacup, why don't you chill out?
Very well. Oh, little Lulu, I love you, Lou, just the same.
Thank you very much.
So, some very coarse language there by Mr. Moore, but I think we all get his point there. And you know, it's funny. It's a clip from The Simpsons, for those of you who don't know, from season 19, which was about 3 years ago. And it's surprisingly poignant on just how Alan Moore has presented himself over the past couple of years. He does actually feel like the industry is not what it was when he was perhaps involved with the major corporations in comic books and the major companies, DC, Marvel, et cetera, et cetera. So here we are. He's out of the superhero game, and he's trying to hopefully stay out of that, except for his League of Extraordinary Gentlemen stuff and maybe Tom Strong here and there. But he's definitely done with DC. So what did you guys think about the interview? What did you guys feel about his thoughts on DC and really his answers in general? We'll start it off with Brent.
Basically, I read this on Bleeding Cool. It's one of the couple sites I check right when I get into work or something, when everybody's still not there, and because I know they're on England time, so there's a lot to read. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's been asleep the past 7 hours when he's been putting it all up. But,
exactly.
So I read this. And I kind of felt like, I know Alan Moore's been a bit strange the past couple of years. I remember listening to him on Indie Spinner Rack and enjoying that interview. It was very well done. And I can understand his point of view that he does not want to be involved or recognized for any of the work he did if any of his comics work becomes mainstream. You know, whether it be, like a film or a television series or whatever. Specifically in the past two of, V for Vendetta and Watchmen, both of which I think did really good by the books. Mm-hmm. V for Vendetta, if you go and read that book and watch the movie, you think I'd opposite, but I thought it captured the spirit of the book very well and updated it for a modern audience. Which I thought was necessary for that book because, being an American – I have no concept of the Margaret Thatcher era in England. So reading the book actually was very difficult for me. But after seeing the movie, I reread the book and actually kind of understood it a little bit better.
Okay.
So I thought that did a good job of at least the spirit of it. And if not the entire story, it's okay, because I don't hold it in such regard that, oh my God, I should be really pissed. Watchmen I read twice before the movie came out and another time – you know, as it was coming out or whatever. So probably like 3 or 4 times total. I thought the Watchmen film did a pretty good job. I thought it was a little slow in places. And I really didn't have any arguments with any of the changes or things left out because I know it's a movie and I accept that. But I just thought that it lacked a little bit of punch. But I think that's maybe part of the Watchmen book itself, is that it's a much more kind of, not drowsy, but kind of slow-moving experience that comes across really well in the comic book narrative and maybe not in a 2.5-hour, 3.5-hour, whatever the longest cut is, film. Mm-hmm. So
Four,
whatever. You know, I understand where he's coming from, that he thinks that, you know, I guess after From Hell is what, you know, pissed him off really bad.
He refuses to watch any of the movies involving any of his properties anymore. He just completely writes them off, takes his name off of it, doesn't want anything to do with it.
Right. Gives the other guy the money, which is cool. You know, it's very nice of him because he could very well just say, I'm not going to be part of it or participate in any of the planning or anything, but yes, I'll still take the royalty check. But he decides not to do that. That's his prerogative. Personally, I would still take the check. I mean, whatever. But it just seems almost contrary to me that here's a guy who started out in comics and who has had unarguably the greatest success of any comics writer in the medium other than Stan Lee. Stan Lee being, you know, having created all the Marvel characters who are going through their movie genesis now. Mm-hmm. You know, Alan Moore created a bunch of characters that are less mainstream but have had less accessible, but have had almost the same amount of success in terms of, you know, attention, media, and movies, and, you know, maybe not licensing or anything like that, but, you know, From Hell, V for Vendetta, now Watchmen, and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, even though that movie was a total piece of crap.
We don't talk about that movie.
I think maybe it was that movie that swerved him from Hollywood or whatever, but. Anyway, it just seems like it's contrary to that, you know, Watchmen, and especially with Watchmen, for me, touched a little bone because Watchmen moved so many freaking copies before the movie came out, like no other comic book should have. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? No other work of Iron Man or Spider-Man or anything like that, no one piece of work moved copies like Watchmen did, even in Diamond or in other bookstores as well. Coming out before and after a movie. So ostensibly what the movie did for him is give his work to a whole new audience who maybe haven't read it before. You know what I mean? And he had the motion comics as well, which were direct translation, even though it was a guy doing all the voices. And they aren't that bad. I like them. You can get them on iTunes or they're on one of the Ultimate Director's Cut DVDs or whatever. But, you know, I just thought it was really – I thought it was disrespectful to the new audience that he's had that, you know, and especially DC, who did such a good job giving the retailer incentive programs to get Watchmen out there and sell more graphic novels, even though it, you know, it's more towards their bottom line. I just thought it was kind of bite the hand that feeds. And the whole thing about him saying that, you know, DC's like hanging this carrot over his buddy of his and then taking it away and then, oh, my royalty check is 2 months late. Well, if you don't care about Watchmen and you don't care about DC, who gives it – why do you care so much that your royalty check is getting late? It just seemed really really like a bit of an asshole kind of attitude. And I know that Alan Moore is not the most accessible creator, or maybe he is, but he's just kind of have some weird things going on in his life, you know. He's a different sort of dude, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
But it just seemed really offensive, not offensive per se, but just really negative and displeasuring to read as a fan of his work. It didn't make me want to go out and read more of his work. You know what I mean? It made me want to – it kind of almost displeasured my like of his work so far I've read. Because of I know that he has these opinions or whatever, and they may or may not necessarily be true, but his whole attitude, even though it's in print and you cannot hear the inflection and tone or whatever, I thought it came out pretty clear, his attitude about the whole thing, and just put a bad taste in my mouth for Alan Moore. And I thought that was really disappointing, you know, being as he's revered as the greatest comic writer of all time. You know what I mean?
Right.
You'd think that sort of person would have a little bit better attitude towards the general, you know, comics industry, whether it's the same or not, you think he would be leading the charge to change it, to move it forward in the new era, you know, maybe when the changing of the guard at DC changed, maybe you'd think he would want to reach out to them, or, you know, if he's so displeased about the old guard at, you know, Paul Levitz, or I don't think he's displeased with him, but, you know, Jeanette Kahn before that, whatever, who he didn't click with at DC. You'd think that once the new regime change came in, he would throw out a hand out there and say, hey, I want to change things, you know, maybe not necessarily for me, but or what the projects I'm working on right now, but maybe for the properties that you still own that have my name attached to them that I still have some say on, because it seems like they keep asking him things. Well, if DC owns the rights, why does he have a say? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's that argument almost seems kind of moot. You know, I wouldn't take the rights back as they were offered to me. Well, why are they even asking you? You really have no say if they own the rights. So that whole part confuses me, but I think that a creator of Alan Moore's caliber and talent would be leading the charge in exposing comics to more people, because he doesn't view it as a kid's medium. He views it as an adult medium, and that's always been his writing stance. You know, so why isn't he leading the charge for change, you know, or at least from a writer's standpoint? He doesn't have to be the face of comics or anything like that, but you think that a visionary like Alan Moore would be doing a little bit more for the comics industry than putting out a music book and or a music album and whatever else he's doing now. Mm-hmm. So that's just disappointing. And, you know, it's guys like Mark Miller who are starting up their own comic magazine in Britain where comic magazines are popular. And it's like Mark Miller's fucking doing it. And he's not the best writer, but he writes good blockbuster stories, and he's having a lot of similar success with as far as movies to comic books and stuff like that. But he's nowhere near as revered as Alan Moore, where if Alan Moore were to step up and go, I think digital is a good idea, and put his properties out there, more people would take notice rather than like, you know, Mark Waid. You know, we just talked to him a few hours ago, and I guess in Baltimore made some comments that he thinks the push to digital is a good idea. You know what I mean? A lot of people – I don't miss the whole controversy, but it didn't sound like a lot of people liked that idea, and even in the comics industry now. So I was just disappointed that the most revered writer in the industry is such a jackass to the industry that made him what he is. And he's able to do what he's doing now because of us, mm-hmm. and because of this industry, and now he's looking back at it with such disdain that I really lowered my opinion of him.
Okay. Well, first off, eloquently put, I think you hit on some pretty key points there. I have some comments on it. I'm going to hold my comments, though, and I'm going to let Julian have the rebuttal here. So, Julian, floor is yours.
All right. His issue isn't really with the – it's not with comics. It's the industry, specifically these big two companies. There's nothing that DC have shown yet that they've done good for him. Nothing that DC's doing is for Alan Moore. Everything that DC's doing is for DC, their company. Mm-hmm. They care about bottom line money. They want to talk to Alan Moore because they want to put more stuff out so they can make more money. They want to put a pirate book out. Why? To make money. They want to make sequels out. Not for the benefit of Alan Moore, not for the benefit of us readers. They want it to because they know the readers will buy it, and that will make them more money. The whole thing with them asking for the rights or anything, that was a big question mark in the whole interview, because he didn't understand why they were asking for the rights, because technically he probably thought that he still had the right. They have all the rights.
Yeah.
So there's something within that contract that probably their lawyers know that if they don't do things right, he can sue their asses.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? If they were some real ass men, they would call on themselves and not use Dave Gibbons to go hit some little comments like, oh, call your boy up and run this past him. You know what? Why didn't Dan Dio call him up his damn self?
Yep.
You know why? Because that's real bitch like Julian's brain when I was reading it. Like, okay. He said what he says this whole thing. I don't like the movies because the movies I think are rubbish. Take my name off of it.
He has never seen the movies.
He doesn't want to see the movies.
No, he doesn't have
to. He gives up all the money. He's had his part. He made the
work. But it's like, how do you critique something that you haven't seen?
He doesn't have to. See, he has no interest in it.
Then how can you say they're rubbish? He's critiquing them without seeing the actual finished
work. Okay. Well, Brent, hold on. You had your time. Let's let Julian get through his points here, and then we can talk about him. Go ahead.
He considers them rubbish. He doesn't want anything to do with them. Now, DC keeps poking the hornet's nest over and over and over again. He doesn't want anything to do with them. So why don't they just leave him alone? He has no problem with us fans at all. If he still puts out comics. He still puts out League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. He's a creator. If he wants to make music, he can make music. He should have that right. I don't see... Nothing in that interview, to me, there was nothing wrong in his viewpoint of the situation. We're never going to hear the other side of it because I doubt DC ever talk about it.
Of course not.
But, like, you mean he's not allowed to be weirded out by the fact that he says no on a pirate book, and then his homeboy, who they gave an offer to write a book, they instantly dead the book? Like, that seems kind of weird. I would see that's weird, too. I don't know. I just don't see anything that DC's really done with him and his work. Because technically, this shit shouldn't even be in print anymore. Like, this book changed the game. They changed the rules on him with this book. If everything would have went the way, if it wasn't a hit, he would have Watchmen right now.
Yeah, I mean back in the 80s, things went out of print after a couple months, you know?
Yeah.
Because really there was no reason to reprint them. I mean, yeah, later down the line they could do a, you know, an omnibus edition or whatever, but most of the time the omnibus editions wouldn't even exist if not for Watchmen. You know, reprintings after reprinting of Sandman would not exist if not for Watchmen, because that completely changed the game on collected editions in the comic book industry, because there continued to be a demand for the book months and months and months and months and months after it came out in the stores. It was the first book to ever do that. That's what Alan Moore has to his name right now, is that he's a great, great comic book creator that changed the scope of comic books, not only with the creations, but with the form factor.
Yeah, he changed the American comic book scene. Thing of it is, if you go other places in the world, nobody else is treated that way. So, like, Ichiro Oda, he's not treated that way. He sells 20 million copies a year. Mm-hmm. One Piece is the biggest comic book in the world. He's not treated like shit.
Yep.
At all.
Yo, Gaiman is loved by almost everybody.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? He gets to write movies, make weird cartoons. He gets to do whatever the hell he wants.
But that's because
Neil Gaiman has an interest, and he wants to.
Yeah.
I agree with
Alan
you, Julian.
Alan Moore has an interest to make music and not deal with DC Comics. If Neil Gaiman doesn't want to deal with DC Comics, he's probably not going to.
Mm-hmm.
Except, you know what? They're not going to poke it. They're not going to try to rape and pillage Sandman like that.
Yeah.
They're just not going
to
do it.
I mean, they did piss him off a little bit when they wanted to do that anniversary edition with the new story, and they canceled it out underneath Neil Gaiman. But you know what? He will still, talk to DC at least. You know, I mean, he hasn't really done anything for the company in a while now, and it is sort of stemming from that. I mean, the entire reason he went to Marvel was to pay for his legal debts in the whole Miracle Man saga, and that's how Marvel wound up with the rights to it in the first place, because they helped out Neil Gaiman in his court battle, and they wound up, getting the ball rolling, and they got that under him. That's why he went over to Marvel. But pretty sure he still likes plenty of people over at DC. You know, he could go there if he wants to. Right now, he doesn't want to, but that could change. You know,
they piss him off enough.
Right. Yeah.
John Byrne won't mess with it, even though he's crazy. He won't. He won't deal with either company.
Hell no.
Why? Because they pissed him off too much.
And he's crazy, but that's another
story. He is kind of crazy.
Alan Moore's not.
Alan Moore's pretty.
He's not.
Well, okay. All right. Well, hold on, Julian. Now I'm in the supporting Alan Moore stance here. I wouldn't quite say he's crazy, but I also wouldn't quite say he's sane.
I think he's perfectly sane. As a person who makes something, he's a lot nicer with the words he said than anything I would have said.
Okay.
I got a word.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Strangely naive.
Okay.
You finished, Julian? Can I
Go in.
Hop in on this one? Okay. This is the same opinion. You live long enough, you hear these battles go on and on. I remember when the creators got together to try to get the Siegel and what's his name, Schuster?
Yeah.
Siegel and Schuster, yeah.
To get their rights back to Superman after the movie. I remember the Kirby battles, which in a way I was more in favor for the Kirby because all he was asking for was original art back. They had the prints. They didn't really need the original art, only to be greedy. These things with Alan Moore, there's this weird naivety that the comic book artists have that I don't quite understand. Okay, first and foremost, you are a work for hire. He did not create Watchmen at his desk somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He created it under contract with DC.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kirby drew all his drawings under contract with whatever comic book companies he was working for.
Mm-hmm.
Superman has always been owned by whatever DC was called as it was going on down the line. Yet all they turn around at a certain point and go, "Yeah, but it's mine." No, it's not. Not no offense. Arguably, I agree with everything said about Watchmen. But this weird naivety of, I can't believe how I've been treated. Okay, Al, no offense here. You're not the only one. Mm-hmm. You're just the one with the power to change it. I have to agree with Brent here. I understand your anger. I just don't understand why you don't put a voice in to change it. Now, people can joke about Image, but to think about what those boys did, they said, you know what? Okay, let's get together and form our own company because we can't take it anymore. And what did they do? They didn't sit back in the couch and bitch about their artwork and their writing and how it's being bastardized and changed. They said, we're going to create our own company, create our own crap, and move off. And that was another game changer in the industry, as a lot of other people say, hey, you can do that? Hey, you can do that. That doesn't mean it was an independent comic book, but because there were so many, and these guys were really famous at the time. Yes, even Rob Liddell. Yes, even him. He was big at this time when it happened. And what's the feat man? Liefeld. People bitch and moan about Liefeld, but Liefeld's lack of feat was selling books.
Yep.
Like it or not, I was there. I saw it happen.
Yeah.
So,
and they're all working with the big two right now because they didn't just turn their back on them, you know, forever and swear them off forever. They're all doing – well, I mean, most of them are all doing –
Larson?
Okay, sorry. Liefeld, Lee, Silvestri, you know, they've all got partnerships with these same big two companies again – because they took what they did and they moved the industry forward to a point that they can go to work with these people. And now it's a working relationship because they changed the game. Moore changed the game and then just didn't care. Go ahead, Umar.
Now, So now whether DC wants to make money or not, which is the bottom line, you know, incorporated. This is not DC charities. This is not Marvel philanthropy.
Yes.
Incorporated. They are owned now by bigger corporations. This is like Disney creating a theme park. It becomes famous, and then Disney goes, we don't want no goddamn kids here. They ruin the whole park. They want to ride the rides, and then they want us to make bigger rides out of the popular rides. What the hell's wrong with these kids? Moore, chill, dude. Okay, you don't want to make the money. I think that Alan Moore is the only human being born way before his time. He had been happy with Van Gogh cutting off his ear for a girlfriend. He had been happy with them with Picasso starving himself out because the art is the important thing. he's really too young to be a curmudgeon, but he's so curmudgeon-y.
Ain't he like 60-something?
Well, what I'm saying is what cracks me up is the most is – you are hateful of the industry you really created this monster. You made it more of a monster. It goes even deeper than there wouldn't be trades and the books. And actually, there wouldn't be writers wouldn't have the recognition without Alan Moore. But you know what? You created that monster. That monster was not created.
He didn't create the monster. Yes, he did.
How?
He made his work. If other people chooses to bite said work, that is on the shark biters.
I am positive when Jesus walked on the earth, he did not imagine that those 12 dudes would write parts of a book that would last forever. I think he was just trying to say love each other.
And you know what?
Let me and burn Muslim books because of me.
Let me point out right here. I knew that somehow with Umar and Julian on the show, we would somehow wind up comparing Alan Moore to Jesus. I don't know how I knew it. It just eventually it would wind up happening on this episode. Continue, Umar.
Here is the cold hard facts of Alan Moore. This is the hardest thing because I know. There are Kirbyites who want to spear me for it. I know there are Stan Lee lovers, you know, the only people who watch that reality show who want to kill me.
I love that reality show.
The truth of the matter is, the man is, in fact, God of comics. That is why DC will not answer to him, because they're not stupid. They're not going to piss off them. They're going to piss off the fans by splitting Superman in two, in a red and a blue guy. They're not going to piss them off by – of course they're going to ask Alan Moore. Not only – I think that it says more, because the truth of the matter is, as it was said in the interview, as was pointed out right here, they don't have to. But they're going to go, and I think that Alan Moore helps them. You know, he would hurt them all if he says, well, don't screw it up, fellas. I'm going to watch you. And then if Alan Moore starts reeling against it, you know, the fans are going to follow, or whatever fans are going to follow. But instead he goes, I'm not even going to, I want nothing to do with it. I don't, and I have to agree with that duality. You want nothing to do, but you're complaining about the royalty check. You're not writing superheroes anymore, yet you're coming up with this storyline, kind of similar to Marvel, using the Charlton characters. Well, I don't know about you, Al, but those were superheroes. Last I checked, I got those Charlton books.
But when there are people flying. Last time, he never liked superheroes. He wasn't
out of the superhero scene when he made Watchmen. He was not out of the superhero scene. So I think you're a little bit off on that, Omar.
No, I'm talking about what he's saying now.
What he's saying now.
He's not writing any superheroes.
Right now he's not. No, no.
He's writing a League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and those are superheroes. Those are literary figures.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but like I said, the naivety of the idea that somehow, unlike any other industry in the world, your work for hire should suddenly belong to you. Remember, when Watchmen was written, when Dark Knight was written, when all that stuff was written, creator's rights wasn't there yet. That came after the fact. As a matter of fact, that became because of these books.
Umar, we don't know the contract.
No, but what I'm saying is,
you enter into a contract
you don't have.
The contract is this: when it goes out of print, it reverts back to Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore. Yeah. That's been stated publicly by many people,
which is why it will never go out of print.
Exactly,
because
they.
But
never
also because it is such a popular and seminal work, it's on the list of Time's 100 best novels. It will never die.
Because they kept it in print. Back in like 1990, nobody was talking about Watchmen being the best ever.
Oh, yes, they were.
No, not publicly.
Oh, yes, they were.
In the comic book store, they were. I didn't read that shit.
Umar. The only reason that you would say that they were is that maybe in your specific comic book shop they were, but not all across the country. There weren't forums back then. You know, there are as many people. There were as many people back in 1990 that had started reading comic books that I guarantee you had never even heard of Watchmen as there were that had read Watchmen at that time.
I beg to differ.
Okay.
Watchmen is also responsible for the boom we all complain about. The boom when the non-comic book people start coming in. Y'all forget Spider-Man in the 60s was read by college students who were not comic book collectors. They gravitated onto these Stan Lee characters. That's how Spider-Man became such an icon, and Hulk, and well, not so much Doctor Strange, but I knew people who didn't read comic books who didn't know who knew Watchmen. Watchmen exploded like nothing else
But it didn't have
other comic book anywhere.
Mainstream overall appeal. Dark Knight Returns got a lot of big things because of what it did to a character that we still saw as Boom, Zap, Pow, and Biff.
It was Batman.
And also, then the 89 movie, and they started pushing that back out. Watchmen hit a serious crescendo of height in the late 90s. And then it just grew each year afterwards into a bigger mainstream work.
Yeah.
With a changing of the guard of the people who write articles and stories. Was like, you know what? I like this book. I want to write a story in the New York Post about this. I'll write a story in freaking Rolling Stone about this. I'll write a story. After the time, back in them old white dudes and back in like 88 and 90 wasn't writing about Watchmen. Come on. I was reading the paper back then. I was a little kid. I was still lazy. I saw Dark Knight Returns. I saw like, one story.
Yeah.
And that was it. They kept that thing in print so it could get to that level of height.
Going back to that contract that you keep talking about, we don't know the contract. True. We don't know the contract. However, even with the government, when I entered into work for the Navy, on the first day, I explicitly was explained that any idea or concept, anything I come up with, and I can't remember if it's even after – if I'm not working, you know, after work hours – explicitly belongs to the government. And I'm sure that DC Comics has had this in their contracts for the past 30 years or more, because they were burned by the Siegels and Schusters, you know, in the 50s or 60s when they first tried to get their rights back. They went, oh, you know what? We should probably change this. So
they
I'm sure it's
had a
in there explicitly.
Siegels and Schusters, that's the problem.
Yeah, they didn't have contracts.
But concerning Alan Moore and all these other guys and stuff like that, you know, it's you go to work for a company, they own your ideas. Okay. It's implicit in the American corporate infrastructure.
He
should be able to get the rights back, or he's pissed because his book remains in print.
Yeah.
He's not Brent. Pissed.
I'm sorry.
Hold on. Before you finish your sentence, hold on one second. Let me point something out to you before you finish the sentence, because you're thinking of contracts in terms of exclusive deals, okay? And exclusive deals did not exist in comic book companies until today. Okay, Alan Moore did not get health insurance from DC.
I'm not talking about
Alan Moore did not have an exclusive deal with DC. He could have brought any idea he wanted to any company he wanted.
I'm talking
because
about
that's
the
not
work
the way his contract
hire, though.
The
he
work,
wasn't
the
work but, for hire.
It's not a matter of exclusive deal. It's a matter of who owns the rights to the property that was put forth. DC Comics would own the rights to the property.
As
for
long as it's in print.
How is DC keeping it print some kind of a malefic plan? It was selling.
You just keep it in print. That's the only goal. If you stop printing after a certain amount of time, it goes out of print.
Okay, you know what? Is it so bad for a writer whose interest is in creating, like a writer like Alan Moore, whose only interest, right, we can all agree on this point, is in creating and writing, correct?
Correct.
That's his only interest right now.
Mm-hmm.
He explicitly states that in this interview, as he has countless times. Is it bad for a writer that his greatest work or any of his works remain in print, period? Is that bad?
He just wants nothing to do with it.
But I understand that point.
You know what? This is the problem.
Why are you complaining then?
Questions about Watchmen all the time. If someone's going to ask him a question, why are you giving him flack for answering the question that an interviewer asked him?
Yeah.
Why aren't you getting on the interviewer for stirring the freaking pot in the first place?
I will agree with you that the interviewer could have been talking about other things and totally was stirring that pot.
Logic, Detroit Gentleman, his music, how are you doing today?
nice weather we're having, health? You know.
You know what?
You could turn down the interview because you know you're going to get asked about Watchmen.
Well, okay. He's done plenty of damn interviews that didn't mention Watchmen once. So, you know, it's a crapshoot. It really is. Let me bring up my points real quick, all right? Because everybody else has gotten their take. Let me get my take in here, okay? All right? First off, I'm a firm believer that I never want to see a Watchmen 2. I've thought that ever since I read the first Watchmen for the first time, I thought it was a complete story that didn't need any sort of extension. It told the story that needed to be told, and that was it. Okay. Now, DC deciding that because of the movie that they wanted to, you know, repackage things, that they wanted to quite possibly come out with new material, perhaps a Rorschach series, perhaps a Night Owl series, maybe a Dr. Manhattan series, put, you know, some of the greatest talent in the business behind it. And I could sense the sarcasm in my voice when I say greatest, because whenever a company says greatest, you know that there might be three books that come out that have great talent, but then eventually you're going to get to the Chuck Austins of the group. You're going to get to the ones that just fail miserably at what they're doing and get laughed out of town.
Okay? Shadowland tie-ins?
Exactly.
Anyone?
Exactly.
Shadowland itself,
exactly. So I don't want that to happen to Watchmen. Okay. Even if Grant Morrison writes himself a really, really great Watchmen analog, as long as it's an analog, I'm okay. If it doesn't explicitly say Watchmen on it, then do whatever the hell you want, okay? Because you're DC, there's plenty of analogs out there, there's the Squadron Supreme over at Marvel, DC doesn't give a shit, it's the Squadron Supreme, you know? DC's had like 17 analogs for the Avengers over the years. It happens, you move on, okay? So if I'm DC, yeah, you have the brand of Watchmen, and you gave it a shot, okay? You gave it a shot with the movie. The movie, some people loved it, some people didn't like it nearly as much. You wanted it to make some goddamn money for you, and it did make a decent amount. Not as much as you wanted to, but then again, you sunk millions into it.
But it made a lot of money on reprints.
But it did make a lot of money on reprints, and that's great. You're sticking with reprints, I'm okay, okay? I'm moving on to the movies here. When Alan Moore brought up this point, and this is a point that I definitely agree with, that Warner Brothers went forward with this movie, even though Fox still had the rights, okay? That is where I realize, and I had been thinking about this for a while, that Warner Brothers in general, and DC to a certain extent, is a perfect example of a 12-armed beast going in opposite directions and tangling itself in the process, okay? There's a reason why we haven't had a good Superman movie in years, okay? And you know I don't like Superman Returns that much, so yeah, I'm including it on that. There's a reason why it's taken us until now to get anything other than the Batman franchise up and off the ground. Hopefully Green Lantern will be good. Whatever. We'll see. Okay? But it's all because one hand says, let's do this. The other hand says, let's do that. They cross. They tangle each other up. And nothing does nothing. Okay? And that was the situation here with Watchmen, the movie. Because one guy didn't stop to think, what about that 80s deal that went down? What about that original attempt to make the Watchmen movie? Is that still relevant? Oh, well, who cares? Let's do it anyway. And that's the sort of shit that makes DC and Warner Brothers in general look like morons. And they have over the past couple of years. You know? There's a reason why, and I agree with Alan Moore's stance here entirely, there's a reason why Marvel is the more lucrative property right now than DC. It's because Marvel has their shit together, and DC does not. So, with this whole Watchmen sequels thing, and the whole Alan Moore getting the rights or not getting the rights, or do we invite him to our tea party, or do we kick him in the ass? This is the same damn thing all over again, where maybe one person said, let's reach out to Alan Moore, be friendly, let's get him back into the game. Well, the other one said, let's have Dave Gibbons handle it, because I don't want to talk to Alan Moore. He scares me and has a funky beard.
What would you do if there was a guy down the street and you had to go talk to him, and he's told you no very many times before? Are you going to send the guy that he maybe likes?
Well, this just in.
Are you going to send the messenger?
This just in. Yeah. I wouldn't talk to him anymore. Or, again, this just in. Jim Lee and Dan DiDio are not the guys that he said no to over and over again, okay? If they really wanted to turn over the new leaf that they really wanted to turn over with this new regime, they would have gone to his door, they would have personally had a conversation with him, sat down, and talked to him, okay? None of this bullshit about hiring friends of his and then not hiring him, or having Dave Gibbons be the medium, okay? You sit down, you talk to a guy man to man if you want to deal with them. Okay? That's it. Because they didn't even give him a phone call. So you can't say that Jim Lee and Dan DiDio tried here. Because they fucking didn't. All right? That's my problem with this whole situation here. That's why if that one thing had happened, maybe I wouldn't be agreeing with Alan Moore in this specific situation.
If Alan Moore cares so much to complain about it, why didn't he take some initiative? You know what I mean?
Why is he complaining? Well, wait, I agree with that. Hold on. I want to answer that.
Let me get to Dave Gibbons.
I have to go on Ian's point here. Alan Moore did not exactly complain about it. Alan Moore was asked and gave his opinion.
Yes.
What I'm only reacting
to
is
give such a lengthy opinion other than no comment, though.
He's verbose.
Verbose. We all comic book geeks are, but my point is he was asked. The other thing is I have to agree. And to take it further than Ian, all right, if you want to turn a new leaf, I believe that Alan Moore has made it clear since like 95 he don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
So respect his wishes then.
You could do that. I agree with that.
That's the simplest thing. I have to agree. If you got that crazy old man in the block, I wouldn't even send anybody, especially if I have all the rights. I would make a public statement and say, I will, like Zack Snyder, mistakes or not, made the best statement. I'm going to try my best to be as respectful to the property as possible.
Yes.
And then leave it at that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the reason he got pissed off about the movies in general was when the Wachowskis decided to say, well, Alan Moore has seen it. And says it's great.
Joel Silver, baby.
Yeah, I mean,
always with a foot in his mouth.
I mean, what the hell? I mean, you got the lion standing next to you, and you're gonna anger the lion for no goddamn reason. And that's what they did there. And you know that furthered his belief to completely distance himself from the movies. But you know, I do agree with you, Umar, that if they want to just like leave him alone. But there's also this into it. And going back to something that Julian said earlier that I definitely agree with, is that there is a lawyer somewhere that said, what if he does have some sort of rights because of that 80s contract? Okay? And the contract I'm talking about is the movie contract. Okay? Because we don't know what happened in that. And this, again, is the problem about contracts, is that you never know what the fuck they say. You know? Because for all we know, because he was actually involved with that production to an extent, that he might have had it written in there that he gets proceeds, that he gets partial rights, that he gets partial yay or nay for the franchise.
Here's where I'm confused. Yeah. Also, during the whole League of Extraordinary Gentlemen thing, when the Watchmen thing first came up, it was my understanding that Alan Moore said, I'm not interested. I'm giving all the rights to everything to Dave Gibbons.
The money. He gave all the money to the artist.
Not the rights.
Here's where that gets me, though, with the whole Dave Gibbons thing. He acts like in the David Lloyd thing, too. Oh, I thought he was going to call me to thank me for the money. Well, OK, yes, that's in jest. And I read that part. But when he gets mad about Dave Gibbons for being the intermediary, Dave Gibbons is caught in the middle. But even when he gets mad later that Dave Gibbons still hasn't thanked me for the money, did you give it? I mean, you don't want anything to do with it. So who's the money going to go to? You or the other guy? Obviously the other guy. He does not give it to him out of the goodness of his heart.
He would get that money if Alan say yes.
It doesn't sound like a charity, though. It sounds like he's just being an angry old pissy bastard. And because
Brent, it was giving money to a friend. Never got, it was giving money to a friend.
If you give a man $1 million, he can't say thank you? What?
Yeah.
What?
That's,
7 figures? You can't say thanks.
That's
what he never gave.
I would fly over there and give him something to eat.
Well,
I'll at least take him out.
He still has this. Okay, even with the money thing, he still has this entitlement attitude, though, and that's what I think is wrong. If he wants nothing to do with it at all, he shouldn't have an entitlement attitude to the money, to a thank you, to anything at all. If he says I don't want my name on it at all, I don't want nothing to do with it, he shouldn't have this entitlement attitude.
He doesn't want anything to do with DC. He wants to do stuff with his friends still. I mean,
Dave,
come on. You give a friend a loan, okay? And I'm talking to you specifically here, Brent, okay? And anybody else on the panel, whatever. You give somebody a loan. You give a good friend a loan, somebody that you've known for 20, 25
it's
years.
It's not a loan. It's a gift.
Or a gift.
Same difference.
Same difference, Brent, okay? You give them any sort of money, and it's more money than you would give anybody else you know because they're a good friend and you know that they're trustworthy, okay? So you give them the money, and you say, all I want to get in return is a thank you, because I know we're friends, and I want to know that you are actually happy to have gotten this money from me, okay? It's a friendship thing, okay? And what happens if this person does not get back to you after that? You never hear from them again, or you, the next time that they hear from you, they're talking about more money. Do you actually want to socialize with this person again? Do you want to completely distance yourself from them, or are you just royally pissed that you didn't get that thank you? That thank you is definitely part of it, but you might want to also distance yourself because you just gave this person money and they don't even care.
And as to the sense of entitlement thing, sense of entitlement is not deserved when you are a person who has a sense of entitlement like a spoiled child or something like that, when you don't deserve it. If there's anyone on the planet who deserves their sense of entitlement, it's Alan Moore. Mm-hmm. See, he might have a sense of entitlement, and I get that from the article, but I wouldn't even go there because I'm saying, I'm sorry, the man deserves his sense of entitlement because he gave it to us. I think people like Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, even Siegel and Schuster, Bob Kane, Alan Moore, they deserve that sense of entitlement because they created something that not only changed an industry, but in my opinion, changed the society in many ways.
Yeah.
In that comic books, that fight to get comic books out of thinking they're only for kids, you know. So I mean, I hear that a sense of entitlement can be very annoying, but if it's deserved, it's simply deserved. It's as simple as that. And I'm with the thank you thing either. My only disagreement is I have to go with Brent on the only thing is I think you it sounds like, you know, what's the old saying, the lady protests too much.
Yes.
I don't care. Well, you got to care somewhat because you keep protesting so much you don't care. And you know what? You also deserve to care. This is your freaking work. This is not – I don't agree with the ownership thing. I would like to see the contracts and everything like that, but it's still your work. And everything DC is because of your work. Well, not everything. I'm just saying the bolstering of DC from where it was to where it is today, Watchmen – and Swamp Thing and those books had a lot to do with it. So you deserve that. Hey, you know what? I deserve that, at least that. I don't know. Did I miss something? Does he not even want the recognition? Because the way I heard, he didn't want his name on shit. Maybe it was just the movies and I misread it, but I just got the feeling. I was like, I hope the man's not going to tear his name off his work.
I think he wants it on the books because he wrote the books. But anything else they make from it?
Yeah.
He don't want nothing to do with it.
Right.
And back to the friend thing, it was just like this. Dave Gibbons asked him a question. He gave his answer. He's like, I want to thank you. Me and Dude May V for the Vendetta ain't cool no more. Because he got all this money. He couldn't even call me and say thanks. And you know what? He had some issues with Dave, with basically Dave Gibbons calling up all the time, I guess, from the way he says it in the interview about things that DC wants to do. It got to the point, he's like, yo, if we're going to be boys, let's not talk about Watchmen because I don't want to talk about it anymore. And he kept calling about Watchmen. And then after he got the money, like, the only thing Alan Moore hears about from Dave Gibbons is in an interview in the press.
Yeah.
And he can't be salty?
Yeah. Come on. And it was an interview which was specifically stating that, you know, Alan Moore didn't have anything to do with this. You know? I mean, what? Do you really need to put that in there? Really? Really? You know?
Stuff from their personal conversation in the public eye.
Right.
It's like, why did you do that? Like, he can't be salty at that?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it painted Alan Moore in a worse light than I would have actually seen from DC. And I know it might not have been intentional, and I know that sometimes things come out differently in the press than they're meant to, okay? But this was a promotional interview with Dave Gibbons, and it made it sound like Alan Moore was being a lot more hostile about the Watchmen thing that he even comes off in this interview. Because again, it mostly just comes off in this interview as, I don't want anything to do with it because I'm indifferent. I don't care either way. While this one made it sound like, no, I don't want the movie made. I don't want anything, blah, 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 blah. It just came off so much harsher than maybe even Dave Gibbons wanted it to come off in the interview itself.
The thing
again,
this,
to be fair, Ian, yeah. Alan Moore comes off more hostile than I think he really means to.
You got a damn good point, Umar, yeah.
He supports that too much, and that's what I don't understand. Like I said, he has a right to, but I don't get it. I'm just like, I get you're against companies that do, I mean, it's not even the big things they do. They do these little screwy things. I think Quesada was reprinting something of Alan Moore's, and all Alan Moore said was put my name on it, and the first printing, you forget the man's name? How the hell did that work?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not like he said, send me $1 million. He just said, just put my name on it. That's all the man said.
Was this the Miracle Man stuff?
I forgot what exactly it was that, okay. that this is a Quesada thing. I forgot exactly what it was that he was reprinting, but it was publicly said. Alan Moore said, "I don't care, reprint it, but put my name on it." And then Quesada reprinted it and somehow forgot his name. And then when he bitched about people, he being angry, I said, "Whoa, no, he's not. He only asked one thing. He didn't ask the world. He didn't ask him to fly over to London. He just said, put my name on it. Yeah. That's all."
Yeah. And see, I think this is the difference. And this is something that what an analogy I'm making here, but this is something that people on internet forums forget all the time, is that tone usually does not translate very well to type. You know, it does not translate very well to print. So even if you're trying to be very calm about something, even if you're trying to be very eloquent and just stating a point, sometimes it can come off as making you seem like a kind of a douche. And That might have been what's going on here. Brent dropped off, so let me go.
I'm here.
Oh, you're here? Okay, good. Okay. How much did you miss? Brent? Hello? Shit. Are you not there again?
I see him. Yeah, he's calling back in.
Lost. Yeah, hold on. Yeah, let me call him back again.
Okay.
Yeah, you good now?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, all right. Is somebody like leeching your internet or something or what?
No, I have a password protected. I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. All right. What did you miss?
I forget.
Okay.
I mean, so go keep going.
All right. What I was saying, and I'll say it again because this is actually a point that you can probably touch on, is that what Alan Moore and what other people seem to forget, and I mean this can you can relate to like even people on forums, is that sometimes. The written word doesn't actually translate to how you meant it in real life. You know, like if you're saying, well, I kind of feel indifferent about the whole thing. And it comes out on a page as I feel indifferent about this thing. You know, tone does not translate into paper.
I said that earlier.
You did. Okay.
And in my initial statement, I said, yes, I know it's written and we're not hearing the tone or anything like that. I said that.
Right. Okay.
I understand that.
Okay.
As for the money thing, that's why my dad always said, do not give friends large amounts of money because it gets messy. It just does.
Yeah.
So in that case, that's all I can say. Would I be pissed? Probably. Yes, I would have to agree. However, would I take such an attitude about it if he decides to call me or whatever? Say, hey, did you get that check? Oh, yeah, I did, Alan. Thanks. Thanks for that. Really appreciate it, bro. Hey, no problem, Dave. Keep up the good work. You know, whatever. All you have to do is ask about it. To wait for somebody to say thank you, that's like the worst thing you can do ever. Because that's when you have that, you know, it's that sense of entitlement again. Yes, maybe he deserves it, maybe he doesn't. But that's where you get that kind of jackass thing, is that he should say thank you. I shouldn't have to even mention it to him. Yes, probably true. But is it so bad to put a hand out there and go, hey, did you ever get that check? Just want to make sure everything's on the up and up. Oh, yeah, I got it. Thanks, Alan. Appreciate all that you've done for me. That's all that it is, and it comes across as heartfelt, probably. But did Alan Moore do that? We don't know. So why does he have to mention that in an interview? Like, that's personal dirty laundry, and he's mostly talking about a company, and he goes and throws in, like, personal dirty laundry with Dave Gibbons. That, to me, is a little bit disrespectful of the partnership and friendship that they've had.
See, now I'm just thinking of Harvey Birdman with the, hey, did you get that thing I sent you?
But the thing is, didn't Dave Gibbons do it first? That's the thing.
With the interview?
Going to the press, yeah. He did it first. It seems like this.
No, but I mean the whole thing in the interview about, yeah, I told Dave on a phone call, just thank me when you get the money. And Dave said, yes, jokingly, yes, I will thank you from my yacht calling you in the Mediterranean. Isn't that kind of like a thank you in itself?
It kind of can be.
Having a jolly phone call with somebody, you know what I mean?
Kind of can be.
But he never made the phone call.
After he was that. On the phone call. He could have said it then. Yes, he could have said it then.
Yeah.
But it now, just seems to me like it's inappropriate for Alan Moore to be mentioning personal dirty laundry in an interview.
It was inappropriate for Dave Gibbons to basically say what he said first before this interview happened.
Even so,
if Alan Moore would have said anything about him and Dave Gibbons' relationship.
Hold on. Three people talking at once doesn't sound very good on the podcast. Come on.
Let me just say this.
All right.
If Alan Moore is so indifferent about the properties and everything that goes on with them outside of the comics realm, why even mention it at all? Even if Dave Gibbons did it first, why even mention it at all? Okay. You know, it's just bringing up a dead baby. Right. You know, why even mention it at all?
That's it. Julian, then Umar.
Oh, I was just saying, like, Dave did it first. If someone goes, I don't get like he's responding.
You're going back to like kindergarten. He said she said
it's bullshit. Not it's not kindergarten.
Didn't we learn
it's like
be the bigger
you
man.
Do something. I have to now fix my image in the public. That's it.
Yeah.
He got contact for the interview. He is setting the situation straight, and he's probably going to be done with it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Alan Moore's going to say anything about it after this. I sure as hell would say that. I mean, if he does, then we can talk about it even more. Like, my God, will he ever shut the hell up about this? But certainly after this, I don't expect to see Alan Moore touch on this anytime soon. If not for another 5, 10, 15, 20 years or whatever. You know, I mean, well, he said his piece. It's done. It's over. You know? Move on, but Umar, go ahead.
Think you would have done that 20 years ago.
The one thing you're forgetting about the Dave Gibbons does it first is just like Alan Moore might not be able to escape Watchmen, everybody who makes a movie or an outside property out of Alan Moore's work is always asked about Alan Moore. Now, I remember an interview when Dave Gibbons said Alan Moore said he didn't want Ace to have anything to do with it. It's because the people interviewing him asked him directly. And I always thought that was curious on the interviewer's part, considering it has already been made public the man said this. So why are you asking the artist again? So half of these, especially if you're reading it in text, half of these answers are coming to the questions you're being asked. It's not like Dave Gibbons volunteered Alan Moore's name. He was asked, and the man said, Alan Moore said he wants nothing to do with the movie. And then, so how is it Dave Gibbons' fault if he's answering, as you said in this article, he's answering questions about Watchmen because he's being asked. Dave Gibbons was asked, as Wachowskis were asked. I don't know if anyone asked whoever made that piece of crap, that, you know, that movie that shall not be mentioned. But
that James Robinson scripted, by the way, that James Robinson scripted. That's the part that makes me laugh every single time.
Yeah, and Cry for Justice.
And the first thing, the first places you come is the fans. That's been kind of since the year 2000. In the year 2000s, it always comes to the fans first. So if you get a bunch of fanboys and geeks, the very first question you're going to ask is the one thing that's on their mind. So if you're replying to the question you're being asked, how is it your fault to reply the exact same answer the person you're asking about gave prior?
Good point. I mean, really, like, I don't even know how to respond to that because, I mean –
I think that's something that everybody's forgetting, including Alan Moore. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because he's not giving it any thought, you know? So,
all right.
Because the one thing Dave Gibbons has never come across to me as is like, he never came across to me like an asshole.
Yeah.
Alan Moore comes off as angry, but I think in many ways he has a right to. I don't understand it, but, you know, you got a right to your anger.
No, neither of these guys are assholes. I mean, I'm not saying that at all about Dave Gibbons. I mean, yeah, I might have come off a little bit harsh before. In fact, I might even want to change that to say that, yeah, you know, I mean, Dave Gibbons is in as much of a shitty situation here as Alan Moore is, as anybody would be in this situation. Because, you know, I've heard nothing but good things about Dave Gibbons over the years. This is a personal, you know, disagreement or argument or whatever that's been blown out of proportion due to the press. And, you know, yeah, Dave Gibbons is a really good guy. But this is all we're getting out of him here.
Go, try and go find the word balloon interview. I don't know what John Suntress does with this stuff. Like, used to be that you pay for old ones or whatever. I don't know what they are.
I think he dropped that.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Go and look for the Dave Gibbons interviews about the Watchmen motion comics. John Suntress interviewed him on Word Balloon. I think it was like it was a one or two part or whatever. But I think Dave Gibbons there pretty explained – he explained the situation very succinctly and very nicely, and you can hear his tone.
Okay.
And he simply said what we've all been saying this whole time, that, you know, Alan has just taken a stance of, you know, having nothing to do with it, and so shall have nothing to do with it. So let's move on.
Okay.
And he was very – you know, he also – I thought, if I'm recalling it correctly, so don't just take my word on that – I only listened to it when it came out, that it sounded to me in that interview that he was very thankful of the opportunity that this partnership with Alan Moore has given him to do the motion comics, to have this renewed relationship with DC, to have a say on the film, mm-hmm. you know?
Right.
If anybody should have a say on the film, it's Alan Moore or Dave Gibbons.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think it sounded to me like he was very grateful to Alan Moore simply because he should be.
Yeah, and
you know what I mean? And the fact that Alan Moore doesn't want to have to do with anything probably means he didn't hear any of this other stuff.
Right. And people seem to be forgetting too, at least according to, you know, certain people that I've heard discuss this whole thing, is that Watchmen was a collaborative effort. You know, it wasn't just Alan Moore writing and then Dave Gibbons drawing whatever Alan Moore wrote down on a page. You know, this was certainly a back and forth between Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore back in the day. They both had a lot of say to do with it, and
the editor too,
certainly, and the editors, everybody involved in the process. The freaking letterer had shit to do in the book, you know. But Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore are the co-creators of Watchmen. It is not Stan Lee presents Watchmen featuring some other dude, you know. It's definitely a collaborative effort. So Dave Gibbons being involved in the project does put a lot of clout onto it, because you've got one of the two right there. And that happens with a lot of things that go to movie, is that you'll have one of the guys involved but not both of them, because maybe one of them didn't want to do it. You know, that happens a lot of time with productions.
And two things to piggyback on your point. There is an entire book that says that. It's called Watching the Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
It's an entire companion that is a walkthrough on the creation of Watchmen.
Yep.
I've only read it four times, but I'm pretty sure I got it right. Now, the second thing is that we also have to give credit where credit is due. And I'm saying that's to whatever you think about the Wachowskis and Zack Snyder. There are things that they did that other people never do.
Mm-hmm.
The Wachowskis work closely with Lloyd. After Alan Moore said, let David Lloyd handle it.
Mm-hmm.
And David Lloyd, in his interviews, has said he was impressed with how the – now, I thought it was a dick move for them. I don't know. I can't get why anybody in the age of the internet would make comments that are so easily checkable. I can't – it's like John Stewart made this comment once, like, you know, everybody, politicians, everybody. We're in the age of the internet now. You can't just say anything anymore.
Yeah.
I do not understand it, especially since they made one of the most impressive adaptations of the man's work I have ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
With Zack Snyder, too, who worked so closely with David Moore, where back in the day, even with – the other movie that shall not has that we whose name we shall not mention, they just chuck everybody and pretend like we're just gonna do it our way. We don't care. Yeah. We'll add characters. We'll just change crap.
Yeah.
Whereas that these two should get the credit for at least saying, you know what, we're gonna be as respectful to this work as humanly possible.
Right.
While keeping our own visions of it, even though I think Zack Snyder should have maybe looked for a little bit more of his own vision, but. That's a whole different discussion.
Yeah, as opposed to just changing the ending, maybe he should have changed a couple of things too. But you know, whatever. I wanted to touch on the Steve Moore thing a little bit, and just see what we think, because it's another one of these he said she said things that's very difficult to know both sides of or any side at all of. But do you really think that DC or Warner Brothers would jerk around a guy who has a dying brother just to fuck with Alan Moore?
No.
Yeah, me neither.
I wouldn't put it past him.
Yeah?
A corporation, I don't trust him.
Right. See, that... forget it.
See not what? I don't trust them. Sorry.
I'm not going to get in.
The last 2 years, I don't trust corporations.
Okay.
They have all the rights of a person, but they're groups of hundreds of people. Yeah. Some bullshit is that.
I mean, I know that they do a lot of shit for their own benefit, but it just it for me at least, I don't know if I could actually see. And you know, I mean, who knows if they would even be the ones behind this or whatever. But, you know, I don't know if I could actually see DiDio and Lee letting that happen.
It don't even have to go that far up. All you need is one person to be a douche.
Okay.
One person to X something out.
Here's...
To make a phone call. It's within the process. They all don't have to be douches. It just has to be one.
I think there's one thing that can be said about this. V for Vendetta differed greatly from the work. Is a book adaptation necessary? Sure. Uh-huh. Watchmen did not differ greatly from the work.
Yeah.
Is a book a prose adaptation necessary when Watchmen itself is so verbose?
Not really.
I would say that the movie was very much different from the comic, but.
It depends on what you mean by different.
In the 2 hours. In the point. In the general plot line, no.
Nah, Julian. I mean, I love you, man, but I don't think I can back you up on that because I saw the point of the movie to be pretty damn close to the point of the book.
Yes,
I did. Was. I saw it was a book report. That's the way I saw it.
Yeah. All right.
It was true. It was kind of like a book report, but however, it did cover pretty much everything that Alan Moore covered in as much as he could in a film with a 2 hour, a 2.5, 3 hour, whatever it was time frame.
Yeah.
As much as you could, they did it. So when you have this big marketing push with the graphic novels and watching The Watchmen coming out at the same time, is a prose novel another way to get extra revenue? Yes, sure, but. Are you going to put the prose novel next to the Watchmen graphic novel and go, here's what you can read? You can read the original work by the author and the guy that's involved with the movie, or you can read a book written by Steve Moore who I don't even know if he had anything to do with Watchmen. Was he the colorist? I don't know.
Steve Moore is just a friend of Alan's.
He's a writer friend. That's about it.
A friend. Here's a guy who's a friend of Alan's who technically doesn't want anything to do with the movie. So what am I going to pick? What's going to be the biggest revenue stream? Not the book, so it makes sense for the company to drop it. So to me, that's just circumstances beyond his control and that were happening at the same time that I think Alan Moore is a little bit misconstruing because of his bad feelings or whatever into something else.
Yeah,
to start the interview with that, I think put it all downhill.
Well, I see where you're coming from with that, Brent. At the same time, I also see a friend being very disappointed that another friend of his didn't have his revenue stream when he thought he was going to. And I mean, yeah.
But friends can be disappointed. But can you hold people accountable to it?
I get that. And I don't know if it was the right idea to put this in the interview. I don't know if this was the right idea to start it off with the interview. However, I can understand his frustration and putting it out for DC. Now putting the blame on DC, on people trying to mess with Alan through him. Again, I don't even know if I could go. I could put the stretch that far.
But it was his feelings. That was my bad, Umar. It was just Alan Moore's feelings. I don't say that. It's none of that's his fact.
Right. I know.
It's just all his feelings.
Yeah. Go ahead.
And the problem with corporations is you think that. My God, this is just so hideous. You can't imagine them doing it. Then you dig and you find out, crap, they did. And you want to give them as human beings the benefit of the doubt. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're calling something safe and millions of tons of oil is being dumped in the water.
Yeah, too many people watched Wall Street back in the 80s and started living by that movie. That's the real Star Wars people.
Greed is good,
real
man.
People live by Wall Street, not freaking the Force. They live by greed is good.
Yep. I just saw that movie for the first time a couple weeks ago. Damn good movie. I ain't gonna live my life by it, but damn good movie.
Yeah, luckily you didn't go into that industry, or you probably would be.
Yeah, I might be Jewish, but I'm not that type of Jew. All right. Wow, I just pissed off a bunch of people. And Jason Wood's not Jewish, so, you know, whatever. It's fine. It's cool. It's cool.
But there is something else about the interview that really pissed me off. I heard about the interview by another, I think IVC or one of them.
Mm-hmm.
talking about the interview, and this is what they said.
ICV2? Was that it? ICV2?
ICV2.
Yeah.
And this is what the headline read. Alan Moore said that after Watchmen, comics went downhill. Now, I read the interview. I was like, I missed that quote. Where did y'all get that from? I heard of misquoting, but putting something in it that I didn't see in at all? Wow.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Let me touch on this, too, because we're podcasters, and we're people, and we're comic book fans. We post on message boards. You know, we write up blogs from time to time. We do talk about this stuff. But there are some comic book journalists that really stretch the word journalist.
They're not journalists.
When they cover this shit. Yeah, I know. But they sure as hell think they are. Yeah. And they might even classify themselves as such. But there's a reason why I don't consider myself to be a journalist. That's because I'm a fan talking about comics and whatever. You know? I mean, I might have a blog here and there, but I'm a really opinionated motherfucker. And a lot of that's going to influence and infiltrate my work. And what that piece at ICV2 said to me is that was opinion morphed into what they felt was fact. They came off not agreeing with Alan Moore, and they wanted to put it into their article as much as possible, and that's the way they did it. And I think that's absolute crap, and people should never, ever consider themselves to be a journalist if they do shit like that.
That's true. I agree.
But that's Fox News.
It's a dick move. Yeah. Completely. Because, like I said, it made me read the article. Because I'm like, well, oh my God, Alan Moore, he needs to chill. Then I read the article, but he didn't say this at all. Where the hell did they get this crap from?
Yeah.
I like I said, I couldn't even find a misquote or an interpretation anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have to agree. That was a really dick move on that part.
Yeah. Because ICV2 isn't just some blog. You know, from everything that I gather about the site, and I've visited it, you know, a couple of times, that this is supposed to be one of the premier sites in comics.
That's like the main business site in comics right there.
Right, right. So to pull shit like
facts
that.
Facts and figures. It's like, you know what real comics journalism would be? A real comics journalist would take that little quote where Alan Moore is like, why are they asking me about making sequels and stuff if they have the rights? Mm-hmm. And you know what they would do? They would take 6 months to a year and really try to investigate stuff, you know,
right.
Get some sources, mm-hmm. You know, really look into it, get their hand on a contract somehow.
Yeah. Go ahead with our moral on
the story
rest.
Like a journalist.
Yep.
Comics don't have journalism. Neither does video games either.
Dude, journalism doesn't have journalism. I mean, come on. I mean, not to put this into a fucking, you know, journalism rant here, but I mean, half the stuff on television that they pass off as journalism these days is not journalism. There is no investigating anymore.
It is on a local level, though. On the national level, mm-hmm. There's not much.
Yeah.
It's just.
Well, in New York, there ain't an investigation in New York.
Oh, I always felt sorry for the news in your city.
Yeah.
For those 4 years I was there.
God.
It's like, good Lord.
God.
They call this news.
I know, right? I mean, the closest thing that we get to news is like the occasional report here and there, or maybe a CBS or an ABC that actually looks real, you know? The rest of it, you got to go to New York 1 for. New York 1 is the only solid news source in all of New York City. Okay, everybody else can suck a nut. Because really, like, there's no actual journalism whatsoever on that. And people on DirecTV can't even get New York 1. So that's the way that goes here in the New York area. I mean, Umar, you're here. I mean, am I preaching to the choir here or what? Are you even there?
You might be mute.
Yo, Umar.
He's on the other phone.
Oh, he's on the other phone? Great.
I don't know.
Well, I assume he is. Ah, whatever. All right. Umar, yo, wake up, man. Ah, fuck it. All right, well, yeah, so that's the way I feel about journalism. That's the way I feel about comics journalism. I think I've touched on that enough. Is there anything else in the article that we haven't covered at this point? Because, I mean, we've been talking here for almost an hour and a half. And
I kind of like the last part where he kind of goes in on him. Like, how come, like, why would they even need to make sequels to Watchmen?
Mm-hmm.
And how come they ain't got nobody to make some new hot shit?
Yeah.
I do like that.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I mean, and that's another thing that I feel Marvel is doing over DC. Because they've got a lot of the hot properties right now. They've got a lot of the hot guys that are willing to actually try and create new things. I mean, I'll give you an example, okay? Brian Michael Bendis has been doing Powers for years now, okay? And yet he still does Spider-Man. And yet he still does the event books, and he still does Avengers, and he still does all these other comics. And yet he still has time to create Scarlet. You know, that's a perfect example right there. That's a new series that he's coming out with he'll hope will change things. Matt Fraction hasn't forgotten his roots. He's re-putting out Casanova, and it's better than it was before, and hopefully it's going to be more, gain more attention than it was, okay? You've got Robert Kirkman sticking by his laurels, God help him, and, putting out The Invincible and putting out The Walking Dead. And that's working for him, and that's pretty creative right there. Walking Dead's going to be a series right now. Awesome for him. What does DC have? They have...
They got Vertigo.
Yeah, they got Vertigo. Which is slowly dwindling, I might add. Vertigo. Because they got Fables, they got Unwritten, and
what else? But they be coming out with a new hardcover like every month for like 6 months.
That's great. How long is that gonna last?
And that's not even the crime novel either.
Yeah. Yeah, but how long is that gonna last, man?
They've been talking about this since 2008. I think they can go pretty wild.
But this was before the regime change.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was before they decided that Vertigo is Vertigo and DC is DC, and they're going to keep all the properties to themselves, quite possibly limiting some of those hardcovers that would have been coming out. I mean, the Swamp Thing Vertigo series got canned before it even started because they're going to bring them back into DC. Hellblazer is still going to be a Vertigo series because there's no way in hell you could put that back into DC. But I mean, stuff like, you'll never see another Zatanna Vertigo series. You're certainly not going to see another Animal Man.
Mature version of it in a DC banner.
Right.
Which DC is kind of mature anyway now. They got people getting their eyeballs pushed out the back of their head and people getting ripped in half. But, they're all right. Because we talk about DC as is just that one part.
Mm-hmm.
I always think of DC It's like a record label.
Yeah.
They have the DC, they have the Vertigo, they have the Wildstorm.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be okay.
Yeah.
Because they're going to put stuff out. Those diamond numbers for those video game books are terrible. I don't think they sell them through that. I think those books make money hand over fist, and no one knows how they are sold but DC Comics.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think, like, diamond, they don't go through diamond. Who cares? Like, people who want a God of War comic book.
Bookstores, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not going to go to a freaking comic book store.
Mm-hmm.
I don't buy God of War at a comic book store. I buy that shit at GameStop.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
And then, I think they're doing things on the sly. Mm-hmm. I think they will keep coming out with hardcovers from Vertigo.
I hope they do.
Another year and a half.
I certainly hope they do, for the sake of Vertigo. Because really, I mean, I love some of the stuff that's coming out of Vertigo. I'll pick it up month after month, but a lot of the stuff that maybe 5 years ago would have came out of Vertigo is coming out of Image right now. You know? A book like Chew would have been a Vertigo book 5 years ago. A book like Morning Glories, I could have even seen it as a Vertigo book 5 years ago. But that's not...
Y'all got to forgive me.
Yeah?
I had the little tyke escaped.
That's fine.
So I had to go put him back in his cage.
That's fine. That's fine.
Kid was up there drinking beer and taking notos.
Oh, lovely.
But what is the context of this Vertigo thing?
We're
talking about the last quote where he's like, why are they still basically trying to make sequels to Watchmen? Like, how come they got nobody that can make new stuff? And he was talking about both companies at the end. He's like, I don't even know why they're putting out the old Marvel Men stuff.
Yeah,
I don't know. I personally think it should come out is because nobody can see it, so it probably should come out.
Yeah.
Well, and also, there's the thing with Neil Gaiman wants to finish his damn story.
Right.
So I get that, but I could see his point. It was like, how come no one's really made a new Watchmen yet?
Yeah. And
somebody set their game up. That's all he's really saying.
I got to answer this because I missed a chunk. Wait a second. This is like J.R.R. Tolkien coming out of his grave and saying, what's all this damn RPG stuff? Can't someone do something more original than Lord of the Rings? Okay, hello. Time. I have not seen a book about five characters living in a real world about to go through Armageddon. One's an insane maniac. One's a so-called superhero, but she got raped by the father of her child. I'm sorry, I haven't seen that. I have seen books that said this was mature and successful. I'm going to write my mature story successful. Sandman don't look like Watchmen to me.
Mm-hmm.
Fables don't look like Watchmen to me. What the hell is he talking about?
I don't think they exploit Fables like they should, though.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, actually.
So maybe he wouldn't have that comment if Warners would actually exploit Fables instead of always trying to get somebody to call him up so they can exploit freaking Watchmen over and over again.
But my question is,
why don't they step their game up?
Sorry. Where are the Vertigo stories that are quote unquote like Watchmen?
I wasn't just Vertigo. We were just talking.
Yeah.
Because Ian brought up that Marvel is doing a whole bunch of different stuff, which they are. I'm not personally reading them,
mm-hmm.
but they are doing a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And I said, well, DC does have something. They do have Vertigo. And it does have new stuff that comes out on a regular basis.
And also, I might add, which company's Brian K. Vaughan property is going to come out first?
Most likely Marvel's.
Yeah. Exactly. The fact that Brian K. Vaughan's Why the Last Man and Ex Machina have not happened out of Warner Brothers yet is a shock and a shame, really. Whether it be a TV show, whether it be a movie, that shit should be in production already right now because that could be their next Watchmen if they really wanted it to be.
I would have Ex Machina fast track as a pilot.
No doubt.
A long time ago.
Yeah. Brent, what about you?
What about me? What?
Well, I mean, what do you think? What do you think could be the next Watchmen franchise for DC? You know, I mean, which one do you feel
is Watchmen a franchise or is it a property? Because a franchise implies more sequels.
Okay,
they want to make it a franchise.
Right. Well, then property then.
I think Why the Last Man could have been a great TV show. I don't want to see it as a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Fables, you know, wasn't a TV show, works for a little while ago. I think it would work great there. They're doing a lot of great shit on HBO right now with, you know, True Blood is, I don't know if it's, I haven't read the books, but to me it looks, reading the series summary and the book summary, but like side to side, it looks pretty similar. Mm-hmm. But they're doing their own thing with it, and the author's totally involved and totally happy with it because she understands it's a different medium, and I think that's something that Alan Moore's been missing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a preview on the True Blood finale for this George R. Martin book, War of the Thrones or something like that, or Battle for the Thrones. It's like a medieval fantasy thing that HBO is doing.
Yeah, Game of Thrones,
Game of Thrones, right. And I was like, that looks cool. HBO did Rome. You know, that's genre. They're doing all this stuff there that I think, you know, television for these long-form graphic novels like Why or Fables, I think is the way to go. And I think, you know, sad as it is that you got to have a pay cable channel to do it correctly or, you know, or AMC. Let's hope that Walking Dead comes off really good.
It will. It will.
You know,
I think they should be looking at Preacher.
They have over and over and over again, and they haven't done shit.
What is wrong with DC?
That's what I've been saying for the last hour and a half, Umar.
It seems like whoever tries to make something doesn't do a good job.
Yeah.
But I'm so, like, didn't they have – I didn't like those Batman, Michael Keaton, and that crap fest that everyone else touts as great. But it made a lot of money. Superman 2, that made a lot of money. It's like DC keeps doing it and then doing something to kill it. I mean, they were, aren't they on the forefront of all the cartoons and the movies? I remember Super Friends long before I remember I saw the Hulk and Spider-Man old 60s in syndication years later. But I damn sure remember Super Friends and all that stuff. How they was on the forefront of the outside of the media outside comic books, and then Marvel comes along and upstarts them.
Because
so Marvel's easily doing property to property to property, whereas DC was focusing on one.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that with this new regime change, with Geoff Johns being the chief creative officer and being involved in the Green Lantern movie and, you know, probably the Flash movie when it comes out, I think that's something that they're going to start doing, assuming Green Lantern is, you know, mildly successful.
Yeah, the floundering of the Wonder Woman movie would have never happened under this new regime. That movie would be made already, and Joss Whedon would have himself a hit. I guarantee you.
And it'd be under the DC rather than directing the Avengers.
Hell yeah.
Ruining that.
Mm-hmm. Hey. We'll see. We'll see once it comes out. I mean, I'm not too big a fan of him doing Avengers.
We'll see if the Avengers is going to be good. Sorry.
Yeah.
You mean maybe that's maybe because what happened with Wonder Woman? Does that explain that TV series that he just had?
What Dollhouse?
Yeah, does that explain what the hell happened with that?
No. Dollhouse is a what explains Dollhouse is that Joss Whedon.
You're hiring a wooden actress to be on a TV show.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that and that.
Who can't act?
That and Joss Whedon planning series to have like four seasons when you can barely even get through one. That's my problem with him. At least with movies, they're over when they're over.
That's been done before. It's called A-list.
The Marvel movies aren't over. They continue into other ones. And I don't know how that works in terms of filmmaking. I'm very leery with the Marvel movie making method. I don't know. They got too many goddamn movies coming out, and I'm starting to not care anymore.
Well, we'll see, man. We'll see. But
you know what? I'm never going to take that attitude. To hell with that. I've been waiting since I was 12 years old for these damn movies. Bring them on. Are you kidding me? I've been promised an X-Men movie since 1981. Damn straight. I remember the day I first read it. An Amazing Heroes X-Men movie plan. I had to wait until the year 1999? No. I want Ant-Man. I want Wanda. Bring me everything. I don't care.
Speaking of Marvel movies, by the way, I just got
Ghost Rider called. He's getting a sequel.
Yeah. Do you like Italian?
bring the monkey back on.
I
like that movie.
I went and pre-ordered Iron Man 2 on Blu-ray when I saw that that Walmart had it for $15, and that turned out to be a mistake. So they canceled my order and said that it was due to a low production or whatever that they weren't able to do it. They just gave me a gift thing for $10.48 so I could buy it back if I want to. I think I'll buy a CD instead because I already got it from Amazon. But that was
don't
pretty
buy a
cool
CD from Walmart. They're all edited.
Not all of them. Some if you buy them from online, they have the uncut ones.
Oh, they do.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
you
know, no. I ain't gonna walk into
get
a Walmart.
Cheap DVD.
Yeah, right.
There ain't even no Walmart in freaking in old New York. There ain't no Walmarts up there, is there?
Yeah. No.
How far is it?
No, there ain't no Walmarts at all. That's why I'm getting it online.
Saying, there ain't no Walmarts up there. You know how New York would go crazy? They probably put it in Times Square like they put every other thing that in the rest of the country just regular low suburban stuff. You just got to, oh, we gonna put Red Lobster in Times Square. Oh shit, people's in it.
Some of the bitches want to put it like. Two blocks down from where the IKEA is in Brooklyn. I'm like, hell no. No way.
You know what? Okay, I'm looking at my bookshelf.
Getting back to
the topic. And I think this will be my closing argument and my closing thought.
Okay.
I'm looking at my bookshelf that I just recently put up since I moved into my new place with my wonderful girl.
Aww.
Looking at my bookshelf and I spot The Kingdom next to Kingdom Come. Kingdom Come. Arguably another great comic work, right? A co-collaboration between Alex Ross and Mark Waid. All right? We can all agree with that.
Yes.
Great, held in high esteem. The Kingdom, just Mark Waid, not Alex Ross. However, you don't have Alex Ross all miffed about The Kingdom. He understood that these weren't his characters or that – you know, it was work for hire, and you know there are certain differences between the two works and stuff like that that they're not apples to apples. But the attitude about Alex Ross and DC, and you know him getting burned on The Kingdom is different than Alan Moore's, and I think that's the point that I'm trying to make here is that there are other creators who have been burned by the company that still to this day work with them and get their cake and eat it too. I mean, the whole JSA thing. You know, the whole Geoff Johns arc was practically Alex Ross's big comeback.
Mm-hmm.
What Alex Ross wanted to do with the sequel of Kingdom Come or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, to me, it just speaks to the character of Alan Moore. You know, God bless him, man that he is. But I think that he just needs to step back and be the bigger man and let things lie. Whether he's asked about them or not. You have people all the time say no comment, no comment, no comment, or I don't want to talk about that. You know, we did an interview with Mark Waid. Ian asked the publicist, you know, what show we talk about, and he said try and keep it towards you know, the Boom stuff, because that's why you're getting this interview, is to promote the Boom products. Cool. We agree with that. You know, no problem.
Yeah.
We touched on Spider-Man a little bit, but that's because it's also coming out from Mark Waid.
Right.
So could Alan Moore have put a moratorium on Watchmen? Yeah. But does he want to? I mean, is that that's the whole issue with me, is that if he's so indifferent, he just should put a moratorium on it about it, period. Yep. And if he wants to set the record straight, write a fucking letter so that we don't have to have this argument. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my closing argument, is that there are other creators who have been in similar situations that have made the best of their situation, and Alan Moore continues to snub his nose at mainstream comics, the industry, and you know, fans who are trying to relate to a crazy guy in England.
Yeah, all we had to do was, you know, title the letter, "Dear comic book fans, how are you? My name is Alan. Remember me? You used to love me. What happened? Love, Alan."
Okay, my closing is, I still love the man.
Good.
I have nothing but the highest respect and esteem for him, but I think you got when you, I have problems with people with the power who will not exercise the power for whatever reason. He does not need the creators, independents. Digital is going to prove this too. You no longer need to continue to work with the companies you are against. You can go try your best to be independent. Not everybody's going to be a Kirkman, but not everybody's going to fall by the wayside either. But in this day and age, you have a better shot independent than you do now. But Alan Moore is not simply independent. Alan Moore has power. He does not exercise that power. I understand you think there's something wrong with the comic society. But when you have the power to do something to change it, even if that change is not immediate, you still have the power to do it. But you're not exercising it. I kind of lose a little bit of respect for what you're saying, because all you're doing then is sitting in your armchair screaming when you should get your ass out the chair and do something. So if you're not going to exercise the power to make the change, don't worry, you know.
Don't lord it over.
He obviously still loves comics, obviously.
Yeah, no, because or else he would have just put down the pen years ago, and he would have just went and done something else. You know,
he would have a book coming out next year.
Yeah.
Or this year, next year.
Well, the next League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
he went independent already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. It's true. Julian, let me get your final thoughts.
Okay, well, I guess my final thought is this: Alan Moore isn't crazy. Corporations like to screw over artists. Doesn't matter whatever type of art, period. It's not surprising anything that he's saying he feels, because I've heard stories that are worse. Music industry, writing industry, movie industry, whatever. They're not these, they don't really even care about what we like as fans. Like, as a business, they just don't. Mm-hmm. There's people working for them that do. And, you know, we got used to a industry that's built upon in the 60s when the real first fans got involved in the companies. And it's kind of been this ongoing cycle over and over again. But lo and behold, I think people want to see a change. There's a lot less fans in the top part. There's a lot more corporate interest involved. So,
what was that about, Brent?
No more fans at the top. Jim Lee, Jeff Johns, Dan DiDio, DC,
they ain't the boss of bosses.
Joe Quesada.
They're not the boss of bosses. They answer to someone.
Yeah. No, don't get it twisted.
They answer to someone above them.
Yeah.
Everybody answers to someone. But the fact that they have the most concerning influence, the most divisive influence on DC, who we're talking about mostly because of this, and you're saying that they don't have, there's not, it doesn't exist anymore, I think it's crackpot.
They can get told no.
But wait a minute now. What happens when fans write the comic books? One more day, one moment in time. That's what happens when a geek writes the comic books. I'm just saying.
And to end it with my thoughts here, okay, because if we keep going like this, we'll be on for 4 hours, so let me sure. make sure that doesn't happen. I would say Alan Moore has a right to every opinion that he's ever spoken, okay, just like everybody else on this earth has a right to their opinion, okay? And I feel that what's done is done with it. Watchmen is what's done is done, you know? Where the movie's done, there ain't going to be any sequels anytime soon. We can move on with our lives, okay? So what we need to do is actually move on with our lives. And so does Alan Moore. Because when he keeps putting out interviews like this, even though I agreed with most of what he said and I was in the positive for this, he starts stirring the pot again. So if I were him, I wouldn't say keep your opinions to yourself, because that's not going to happen, because that's Alan Moore and he doesn't usually do that. But maybe start talking about some other stuff, you know, because Watchmen's done and you say so yourself. You know, I mean, why keep bringing it up unless you really do in one way or another want it back, like Brent and what Umar, what everybody's been saying on this episode. So give it a rest. Let's move on. It's another week of Extraordinary Gentlemen book coming out soon. And I'm sure Alan's going to have a lot to say about that once that comes out. All right. Sound good?
Good for me.
All right. First off, awesome debate on this episode, people. Okay. It was like I was watching like one of those news back and forth things. Worked very, very nicely.
Baby.
McLaughlin. Yes. McLaughlin. I love saying that. First off, Julian, where can we find you these days?
JulianLytle.com. Twitter.com/JulianLytle. AndSideJulianLytle.com is my webcomic. And that's about it, you know. Just know my name, you can find me.
Damn right, on the Facebook.
We're trying to make him a Hideout member.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I've been on a couple episodes.
Trying to pull him in.
speaking of the Hideout.
Yeah, to fix this Hideout. And all the satellite shows, No Apologies, Comic Road Show, Podcasting at the Dark, whenever we get around to doing this show. And a couple of, you know, and there's a new one, Nothing's On. That's Daryl's show. And my babies are branching out. It's so wonderful when they grow up.
Well, I was on Comic Book Road Show 106 for the beginning of Daryl's podcast that he listens to thing, and that was a lot of fun. Really, really a lot of fun. And in general, always fun talking to you, Umar.
Anytime. When are you coming on the show, dude?
Dude. We keep asking each other these questions and then nothing fucking happens. let's get something going before winter rolls around, or when I don't want to leave my house anymore, all right?
No problema.
All right. And Brent, any BKs, anything's coming up? You're busy though, so I don't expect anything.
No. You can find me here stirring the pot regularly on Comic Time, man.
Fantastic. And next episode after this will be our Batman Under the Red Hood episode, which we pushed back a little bit so that these two episodes could come out, Mark Raid and this one. Once again, we are sponsored by DCBS, Discount Comic Book Service. I will put this on here since Brent will hopefully have this out before the month is over, and I'm sure he will, because that's another 3 weeks until the month is over, so we don't have to worry about that. Stan Lee Traveler, number one, is our extra pick this month. 75% off at Discount Comic Book Service, dcbservice.com. 99 cents. No limit on quantities on this one. Written by Mark Waid, art by Chad Harden, cover by Scott Clark and like six other people. And this is a Stan Lee, Mark Waid collaboration, The Traveler. So should be really, really cool. Make sure to check it out. Thunderbolts 150, 50% off for $249. Written by Jeff Parker, penciled by Kev Walker, covered by Greg Land. Oh, Land. Landy, Land, Land, Land. This one is a milestone issue for Thunderbolts, 50% off. It is the Avengers versus the Thunderbolts yet again. So that should be fun. Batman the Dark Knight, number one, is our DC pit. 99 cents, 75% off, written and drawn by David Finch as he begins his run on the Batman world. And Utopian number one, story by Mark Guggenheim and Tara Butters, art and cover by Ryan Bodenheim and Mark Englert. And that is 50% off for $1.49, regular price of $2.99. And that's out of Image. So make sure to check that out and use the promo code CT8 for an additional 8% off on your first order with discount comic book service, dcbservice.com. And we'll see you guys at New York Comic Con, nycomiccon.com. Go ahead and get your tickets now for joining us at the podcast arena and the podcasting panel Friday at 6:30 in panel room 5. So, Julian, thank you, man, for joining us, man.
Oh, man, thanks for having me on again.
Nah, pleasure's all mine. And hey, you were on an episode with Brent this time. You feel special?
I know. Sorry, we got into like a little argument, but.
Oh, come on. No, it was an actual argument or anything.
Yeah, the spirit of the episode.
You know.
Yeah. I was looking for hearty debate, and that's exactly what we got in this episode. No hard feelings at all from anybody. It's just good fun.
Pro-British. I'm pro-British.
Damn right. Support the British. Support Doctor Who.
They got the heavy money. They got the heavy money.
Only beat them twice.
Takes $2 to equal £1. It's called a pound.
We saved your ass in World War II. Yeah, well, we saved your ass in World War III. All right. And Umar, I said thank you already, but I'll say it again. Thanks.
Thanks for having me, dude.
All right. And Brent, 2, man. We put out 2. Well done.
See if we can do it in a week.
Yeah, right. All right. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com, graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com and the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. They are graciously appreciated and help spread the word about the show. And we will see you guys next time for our Batman Under the Red Hood episode and at New York Comic Con for a hell of a lot of live recording on Friday and Saturday. So for Julian Weidel, for Umar, Mr. DeFixa, and for Brent Cassina, I am Ian Levitsky, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics, and I will let Alan Moore take it away.
There's nothing like a happy ending.
Holy heavens! Is that a meteor heading for the Earth?
Maybe. But tonight, there's a benefit for underpaid comic book artists of the 40s and 50s.
To the cash bar.
I know, right? Jeez. All right. Bring in the fixer.
Breathing so heavy.
Me?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sounds like you're Darth Vader in on me. Yo, Uma.
You know, I completely forgot about you guys.
Well, that just makes me feel peachy.
That makes two of us. Not really, I was downstairs eating.
What'd you have?
My DVR broke. How will I tape Hellcats?
What do you got? What's your DVR anyway?
IO Digital.
Oh, yeah. They suck.
It's been
Uncle
working.
BitTorrent.
Well, ours has been giving us nothing but trouble since we've gotten it. So I'm not exactly that big a fan of the IO DVR. Alright, let me bring in Judy and Lytle.
You guys aren't gonna gang up on us, are you?
Of course we are.
Not you.
Hey, what's going on?
Yo, Julian, what's up, man?
Julian! What's up, Omar and Brent?
How's it going? How's
it going
on Sunday?
Oh, man, SPS is off the chain, man. Y'all need to try to make it out to that joint. It's crazy.
One of these days I'll make my ass out there. Yeah. Instead I got to enjoy the lovely rainy weather here in Brooklyn for the Brooklyn Book Festival.
Oh yeah, it rained on Sunday. It was sunny and bright as hell on Saturday though.
Yeah, I know. It did that just to piss me off, I swear. Yeah. Although I did get to see John Hodgman, so that was fun.
Oh, isn't that it's a PC guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, he's on The Daily Show, and,
what the fuck? What?
Black Panther's the new Man Without Fear.
Wait, seriously?
What it says on Newsarama.
Oh, that's a shame.
I want a Gambit.
You didn't want the Falcon? Come on.
No. I want the Falcon to be the goddamn Falcon. He be the Falcon. They just don't use him effectively.
He's the goddamn Falcon.
Just you know what I'm saying? Teaching the seeds. You know, being an upstanding brother and friend of Captain America.
Oh, boy.
You know, I love how they drew Black Panther's ears to be like almost like devil horns, just to
which Black Panther.
Check this out though, T'Challa.
Oh, it's T'Challa.
You know how 512 said it was the end of Daredevil?
Yeah.
513 is going to be called Black Panther, the Man Without Fear, number 513. And the creative team is novelist David Liss and artist Francesco Francavilla from Black Coat.
All right, well, as long as Reginald Hudlin has nothing to do with it, I'll be happy.
Hey, I like some of that.
It's funny, they said...
yeah, really? You like some of that?
Yeah.
Wow. So you're the one.
That shit was real.
Nah. When he was... Once he started getting around to the whole... We can't give the white man the cure for cancer because they're just not ready for it yet. I was just like, yeah, all right, I'm done.
Hey, sometimes I like a little militancy in my comic books.
Yeah, but it's okay. But when you get to the point where you're unrelatable to the majority of people, comic book readers, I don't know. It's just unrelatable, and I was like, I don't really need to read this.
My friends, a lot of black stuff is not relatable to the majority of comic book readers because there are very few of us in comparison. Right.
Exactly.
No, you know, I'm not saying anything about the racial stuff. I just get pissed off when he basically changes the whole of Wakanda to be something entirely different than it was for years and years and years, you know?
Yeah, I just accepted it as some weird, you know, his own take on it. And it's okay, because it's not like continuity really matters in the Marvel Universe.
Point.
And overdoing Doom didn't upset anybody?
The Doom thing didn't bother because Doom ain't racist. He just hates everybody equally.
Yeah.
No, that's what I mean. I mean, like, Doom... That whole Doom War, Reed Richards is like the most inept person. I'm like, how many times have you kicked this guy's ass? I mean, one day, I want to see the hero confront the villain just standing there and say, how many times have I beat your butt? Why do you keep trying?
Reed be getting hell. Reed be cheating. Reed's
did you finish out that miniseries?
I have the issues. I haven't read them yet.
1, 2, and 3 were good, but 4 was okay, and then 5 and 6 just kind of like, what?
Yeah.
I ain't hear nobody even talk about Doom War after, like, issue 3. I forgot it existed.
Was issue 3 the one with Deadpool on the cover?
Yeah.
Okay. That's why.
And that was, okay, does anyone know, do Deadpool comics sell that much? Really?
Apparently. Apparently they do, man. Yeah.
They wouldn't make them.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing as, you know, back in the day, putting Wolverine on every goddamn cover.
I hear he's supposed to have a movie coming out.
Eventually. Well, that might not happen because Warner Brothers is trying to get Ryan Reynolds not to do it because they don't want
more power to him.
Yeah, they don't want brand confusion.
More power DC and Warner Brothers because I don't want a Daredevil movie. Sorry.
Yeah, well, I don't even really want a Green Lantern movie that much, but whatever.
What?
I haven't been thrilled with the promo art so far.
Me either, Ian. Me either.
Yeah.
I saw a picture of the costume. It's going to be like what he's wearing now with the V above the crotch.
No, that's
not it's not a full-blown green suit.
That's fine and all. It's just all the aliens looks really, really funky. Like,
I think they killed Kilowog. They took the meanness out of him.
Yeah, Umar, look for the picture of Kilowog, and Kilowog looks like a puppy that's been burned.
And Umar, it's hard to hear you.
I got to be honest with you guys. I don't understand DC people.
Yeah.
DC people. Did this happen the last time we was on that
show?
Yeah,
I know. That's why I haven't started the actual recording yet. I figured I'd let Umar get it out of the system. That, and I guess Daryl forgot to show up, so we'll do it without him.
I saw him sign on earlier, but...
Yeah. I'm just going to assume that there was another shooting outside of his building like last time.
You can call Jason Wood.
Wood's probably getting ready to do 1106.
It's Tuesday night.
Oh, yeah, that's true. What the hell's he doing on? Yeah.
I know, unless they're going to do something early. You never know. Lately, their schedule's been crazy.
Yeah, they've been doing Tuesday shows, Thursday shows, Wednesday shows, Sunday shows, Friday shows, whenever they want to do them. Unless fine.
Okay, this is what I mean why I don't understand DC people.
Yeah.
Y'all praised the hell out of that ridiculous Smallville episode.
Which one? The Justice Society?
Yes.
Yeah.
That had especially Smallville haters. But that, I don't get it. But, you know, but the one picture of Green Lantern, everybody's up in arms. I'm like,
because one has a television budget and one has a film budget.
Yep.
Well, the film isn't finished yet, so. But I don't know. DC, they keep dropping the ball on this movie thing. I don't understand them.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to get with that. I want to keep Batman realistic. What? Huh? Oh, so how many billionaires you know jump off 300-story roofs? I want to meet these guys. So Clayface is too much. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know the President of Virgin went out and beat the hell out of people at 2 in the morning. Oh, okay.
You never know. He does some crazy shit.
He is one badass motherfucker. What happened?
Right? We don't know what he does.
It dropped out. It all went silent.
That's weird. All right. Well, if it happens again, let me know. But for now, we'll get going. Like I said, I think we're just gonna do it without Daryl because I don't feel like waiting for him. So we'll get this going here. All right. So who's taking the just so I know ahead of time, who's taking the pro and who's taking the con for this?
I'm taking the Alan Moore's a crazy old coot side.
Okay. I'm pro Moore, baby. Let's go.
I think on this one I'm pro Moore. Umar, what about you?
He is our God. He is our Savior.
Oh, see, that's exactly what gave him this attitude.
Well, you know what, Brent? I'll be middle of the road, all right? Because I do agree with some things and not on others. So I'll support you on some, all right?
Okay.
All right. Because I don't
even heard my points yet.
I know. It's just I have a feeling that that's the way it's gonna go. And I do have a little.
Because I started the conversation going, we should do this.
Of course.
I didn't finish my sentence. He's our God. He is our Savior, and God needs to chill the fuck out.
And we're 2-on-2. We're good to go. All right.
Oh, Wood's doing PKD Media. That's why.
Nice. Well. And that's why Pryor couldn't join us tonight because he's got other obligations. Yeah, and if he's got a lot of shit coming up prior too. I'll let him announce it himself once it goes down. But major changes happen in the PKD media world come like October-ish thereabouts. So listen in, I guess. All right, we ready, boys?
Yeah,
go for it.
All right, I'll count it down. All right, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. That was a fun way to end the episode.
I can't believe that was so long ago.
Where was that from?
That's from Simpsons episode. Simpsons was hilarious.
Yeah, so about...
that old, though.
Yeah, three years, man.
When they stripped off their suits, it was League of Independent Artists.
That's the one.
Oh, okay.
That's the scene. They just, like, they get all muscular, and it's hilarious. It's all flying.
Yeah, it's the same episode that Jack Black sings Unyoung Pussycat. Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right, boys, I've been talking nonstop for 4 hours, so I'm going to go shut up and watch Daily Show.
Damn, 4 hours.
Yeah, I got to catch up with my Warehouse 13.
Nice. Yeah, we just watched last week's episode from like 7 to 8. Good times. All right, thanks for joining us, man.
All right, guys,
have me on.
No, dude, pleasure's all mine, and can't wait to see you at New York, brother.
Yeah, man, it's gonna be fun. It's
hell yeah,
you.
Hell yeah. All right, and Brent, man, we made it.
We made it.
All right,
play. It looks like we made it by Baron Marilyn.
No, because then we'll get sued. It's already bad enough that we played Simpsons.
Don't test the water too much further. They'll get you.
Right, exactly. Brent, I'll shoot this up onto the FTP, and I'll send you a link, all right?
Amen.
All right. All right, night, guys.
Peace. See you later.